24th, I believe.
24th. Today is May 24th, 2007. We're at the University of Victoria outside the HSD building with Tayaki Alfred. And I'm Jessica Wood.
Thanks for meeting with me today.
No problem.
Can you tell me when you signed up for the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I signed up in 1981 when I was 17.
17?
Yeah.
What prompted you to enlist?
It's hard to state one reason, but...
Is there several?
I had always wanted to be a soldier, put it that way. Mm-hmm. I was always drawn to it, military. And then I just was very, very focused on shooting guns and blowing things up.
Really?
When I was a kid. I always liked to shoot guns. And I liked the idea of doing it in a disciplined way. And I always had this idea of, you know, being a soldier. Oh, yeah. This is, actually, I'm being interviewed here.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
even
so
better.
Even,
this is the way to be interviewed.
Yeah, that's right. You look like you guys just come from a meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Drop in our course next week if you want.
Yeah.
All week long, man.
Okay.
Over
right.
In the Elliott building there.
Uh-huh. Well, is that where it is?
We got, like,
I was talking to Glenn about it. Yeah.
32, 33 people come in, so.
Great.
We'll be there all day. All week long. So.
Okay, I'm getting ready for the learn-its.
Yeah, whatever. It's just
can I
open.
Drop in, drop out, or is that going to be disruptive?
You'll see. See how people look at you when you drop in and drop out. Well, you're welcome. Come on in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. How's Rose holding out?
She's getting big.
2 weeks.
Nah, about another month, I'd say.
Another month.
Yeah.
Give her our best. Debbie was thinking about her last night.
All right,
yeah.
For sure.
Has she stopped working? Or?
No, she'll be stopping the first. So, yeah, next week's her last week.
Next week.
Yeah.
So great. Okay.
All right, see you later. What was I saying? Yeah, I wanted to shoot guns and blow things up, and I kept having dreams about being in a war. So, kind of like a death wish, you know? Like, you want to be... Want to be a soldier in a war.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any other family that had joined before you?
My grandfather was in the Canadian Army in World War II, D-Day.
Wow.
And, well, Ganawaga is full of veterans. So I knew World War I veterans, Korea, Vietnam, World War II. They were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And inside and out of my family, so.
How'd your family feel about you enlisting?
They didn't want me to.
No?
No. They were quite upset. Especially since I joined the Marines, you know. They were less upset about me joining the Navy or something like that. But, you know, when it came down to the Marine Corps, they definitely did not want that.
So you knew it would be harsh?
Yeah, it is harsh.
Mm.
And, I don't know, the experience, don't forget this is 81, so the Vietnam War was just over, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it ended in 75, so, I mean, in their minds, that's what they associated the Marine Corps with. They knew it to be that, so they weren't too happy about their son wanting to go in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a couple of guys that were older people in our community, and I asked them about it, but... They were in, like, peacetime,
mm-hmm.
and they said, oh, you know, it's harsh and all this stuff, but they didn't have, like, really horrific things to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy that was in World War II, one of my uncles, granduncles, he was in the Army in World War II, and he was a veteran, and he was a proud veteran and everything. And I asked him about, I said, oh, I joined up with the Marines. He goes, you're running with a rough crowd. And I was like, oh, yeah? What do you mean? He goes, you'll see.
You'll see.
That's it. I guess he knew better than to try to talk me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anybody who can really talk you out of it once you're bound and determined to do that.
Mm-hmm. So what was training like?
Training?
Mm-hmm.
Boot camp?
Yeah.
Well, boot camp's quite the experience, eh? Especially in the Marine Corps. Their whole idea is to just break you down. and remold you into what they want you to be. So if you've ever seen that movie, Full Metal Jacket,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty much like that, except harsher. I heard it's softening up these days. I read a newspaper article on how boot camp they're changing it to be more sensitive to like this generation. But definitely when I went in, it was pretty much the whole idea was to, you know, break down your personality and to take away any sense of pride that you had outside of the Marine Corps.
Hmm.
You know, to show you that you were really nothing if you weren't a Marine.
So what kind of effect did that have with you being an Aboriginal person from Ganawake?
Well, I mean, when I signed up, I pretty much I had concluded that I was going to put that aside.
You know, yeah.
I mean, I wasn't one of those people who believe like in patriotism or anything like that. I never did, and never will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was more something I wanted to do as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it went against like a lot of our political principles,
mm-hmm.
as the Iroquois people. So some of our elders were quite adamant in saying that, you know, letting me know that I was doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, I don't care, you know, this is what I want to do. So
you were 17?
17, yeah. And then I left when I was 18 because I couldn't leave right away because I was underage.
That's right.
To be in the infantry, you have to be 18. So I put that aside, you know, I was who I am, but I didn't really go there as a Mohawk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to try that and be part of that. So to find out what it was to be a Marine and to live as one of them and to live as an American, you know, to find what that was.
Mm-hmm.
So that's generally what I experienced, actually. You know, there was no real racism or... There is no distinction in the Marines between races, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
No. Everybody's basically treated the same. And they acknowledge racial differences, but, you know, at the same time as acknowledging it, they say it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You're all different shades of green, is what they say. And they don't use white, black, or brown. They just say light brown, light green, dark green, and in between green. You know, that's what color you're referred to.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that actually one of the things that I liked the best about it. Of course, socially and out in town.
Different.
It's different, but I found it was all black and white at the time, you know, black people versus white people, and the amount of hatred they had for each other surprised me in the social environment. But as a native, and I know this is true because everybody else said the same thing, we were like privileged because the black people thought we were part of their group because
mm-hmm.
we weren't white, and the white people thought we were part of their group because we weren't black. So, you know, on any given night, I could be with all the brothers and sisters, and then on the next night, I could be at a hoedown, you know, with a bunch of bluegrass guys, and I could fit right in, which is what I did. I never really took sides. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm not racist, so I was just like, hey, you know, it's cool to be doing this and it's cool mm-hmm. to be doing that. I don't see why you guys are fighting so much.
Right, if you can move between each world.
I just let them fight. It's none of my business.
Yeah. So where did you go when you went on a tour of duty?
Well, I was stationed in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I spent, I guess, the best part of the most time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on a six-month tour to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Japan and Korea, and then floating around in a ship. And then did twice, I believe, in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And once in Central America, part of that Caribbean tour actually landed in Central America.
Whereabouts, do you remember?
In Honduras.
Oh. Now you said that you specialized in infantry and machine guns.
And that was my job.
That was your job?
Yeah.
What kind of training did that involve?
Well, they teach you everything you need to know about how to deploy your specialized weapon, and mine was a machine gun. It's called it was a handheld machine gun, M60, which is what you see, like the Rambo-style guns. Mm-hmm. And then after that, after about a year, I switched over to heavy machine guns, which is 50 caliber mounted machine guns, which you see on the news a lot in Iraq. You see these guys, or if your kids have video games, you know, the big machine guns that are mounted on top of Jeeps. Mm-hmm. So I switched over to do that.
So you're in for 4 years?
Three? Yeah.
Oh, right, because you had a year delay because of your age.
No, because if you were dumb enough to sign up to the infantry, they gave you a year off your enlistment. Kind of like an incentive. If you wanted to sign up for the infantry, we'll let you go in for three rather than four.
Rather than four.
Yeah.
And you made it through.
I figured if I was going to stay in, I could always re-up.
Yeah.
So why commit to more when I could just commit to three to start off with? So it was a smart move in the end, I think. By the end of 3 years, I wanted to get out. Mm-hmm. Not because I hated the Marines so much, but I had other things on my mind and other things I wanted
system.
To do. Kinda, although it was very tempting to stay in. I did very well, and they were going to promote me and give me a better job and all this stuff. But I just decided that I wanted to get out and come back home and do what I'm doing now.
Yeah. What kind of effect do you think being in the military, being in the Marine Corps had on where you went with your academics and your politics now?
Two separate questions, really. Mm-hmm. I think the academics part of it, it helped a lot because it gives you, it gave me like a sense of discipline and organization. Mm-hmm. It's like just personally, more of a personal discipline and a work ethic and an ability to kind of negotiate in personal relationships and stress situations. Mm-hmm. You can negotiate through that, no problem, basically. I mean, all the kind of conflicts you have in a university are really nothing compared to the kind of stuff that you experience in there. So it's a bit of a joke when people talk about stress and all that in a work environment. So that's easy. Politically, though, it's a little more difficult because, of course, there is a lot of, I don't want to say brainwashing, but you are who your friends are, basically, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're hanging out with a bunch of, like, rabid Americans, you're going to start thinking like them, just through your conversations and all that stuff. So I think when I was in the Marines and afterwards, even lingering until I actually got through all of my education, I was probably a lot more conservative in my views about a lot of different things. I mean, not native issues, of course. By everything else.
Yeah.
So I just kind of absorbed all that right-wing kind of, well, not even right-wing, just kind of like mainstream American ideas about the world. Mm-hmm. And took a while to kind of purge that and get back to some sense.
How were you received when you came out of the Marine Corps?
Oh, it depends who you ask.
Yeah.
And by which crowd, I mean, to your family or you, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter, really. To the people in the community, you mean, like Ganawage?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people have mixed feelings. I mean, there is a bit of pride attached to being able to go and do something like that. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. There's respect, I guess you would say, that comes from doing that. Then there's resentment among those who either couldn't or tried and failed, you know, all the usual resentments and jealousies. And then there's kind of dismissal on the part of, kind of a grudging dismissal on the part of like the way more traditional minded people who say, oh yeah, look, all these Mohawks are going to serve the white man and all that stuff. And so it's not articulated directly, but you can tell there's this attitude like, oh, you know, they're serving the wrong cause. But, you know, at the time, there was no warrior society, like it wasn't active. Mm-hmm. Politics, as we know it, like Mohawk politics and all that, was really just kind of starting up. You know, when I was younger, they were involved in a whole bunch of radical stuff, but in the early 80s, there was nothing happening until...
Okay, had it happened?
No, it was a long time after that. Mm-hmm. And then until like the cigarette industry started up. And I would say, well, I've always been on the right side of that cause. You know, I worked in the cigarette industry afterwards. Okay. And I've always been on like the Mohawk side all the way along. But when I was 17 years old, there was no Warrior Society to join. And there was no, wasn't even a lacrosse team in Ganawage. I don't know what was happening in our community, but it was kind of like a lost time. Mm-hmm. It was very dysfunctional.
Were there still residential schools operating at that time?
No. Our community wasn't really affected that much by residential school. It was really only like orphans and people whose family had completely dissolved. But it was kind of a minimal impact. It was just a overall impact, you know, of like land loss and alcohol and all that kind of stuff. So it was even a very dysfunctional, violent community in and of itself. So at that time, it only started to change in the 80s. So when I first joined, like, what was the difference being in in a war zone when you every weekend was like a war zone on the reserve, you know?
Right.
So, but that's it. And all the other kind of social dynamics that are universal come into play. Yeah. All these resentments, and then there's the attraction of soldier, you know, that kind of thing. So that's you don't even really need to say that because that's universal.
Yeah. So what do you think now about, there's such a push for different programs we're creating, especially in more rural communities than urban, for Aboriginal youth to get into Ravens and early enlistment programs. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a terrible thing. I mean, I'm totally opposed to Native people joining the military, the Canadian military. The Canadian military has been used in very recent times to try to destroy Native communities. And if you look at Oka, I mean, what better example do you need if our Native communities are ever to rise up and take control of themselves and their land again? They're going to have to do it in opposition to the Canadian Army. And I don't see how a young Native person can today say that they want to serve that army when it's so diametrically opposed to the interests of our own people. I just can't see it.
So you think it's strategic that they have so many recruitment programs for Aboriginal youth?
Of course. They're trying to undermine the potential resistance, and at the same time they're trying to draw on the only demographic group in Canada which is loaded up with youth. And so they know Natives, they have the youngest population and the biggest youngest population. And they know their youth population is both getting richer and shrinking. Mm-hmm. And they know that only poor people join the military, so they're targeting us. And I just think that that's natural on their part. I don't fault them for it. Mm-hmm. But the people I do fault are the Native leaders who encourage that kind of thing. It just shows that they have a complete... They've totally lost the sense of themselves as Natives and nations, and they're totally assimilated. So it's actually kind of pathetic in my mind to see Native leaders encouraging them. None of our leaders encouraged us to do it. And like I told you, elders and so forth told us not to do it. Mm-hmm. But being kids, we did anyway. And it's different now where they're actually allowed to come into these communities and do these things, and they're given opportunities to go to camp and stuff with the army and all that. I mean, aside from all this political stuff, people don't realize the army is about killing and destroying. And they try to build it up like some big fun video game thing or humanitarian thing, which is all utter bullshit. The only problem is you only realize that once you already get there. That's why it's the responsibility of the elders and the leaders to really, you know, set the youth straight when they're thinking about the military. If they're bound and determined to go kill brown people in the service of white people, go ahead. But most people don't really think that that's what they're signing up for. Mm-hmm. And in reality, that's all armed forces are today. World War II, a little bit different. You're talking about a global conflict between empires. I'm not a big fan of the, you know, the glorification of war in any sense, even World War II, because it was just white empires fighting against each other. Mm-hmm. And so we were being used then as well. But there was a little more of a rationale. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, there's no threat to our existence. And yet, we have our kids wanting to go sign up to kill Arabs and Africans so that white people can have more money and more oil. Mm-hmm. That's what it boils down to. And our kids are not being told the truth, you know. So, as you can see, I'm adamantly against it.
Mm-hmm. So, what do you see as viable alternatives?
Well, I don't know if there needs to be an alternative. Like, it's as if war is normal. Mm. You know, like in my situation, you could say, what was the alternative? Well, I don't know. Maybe I could have focused a little better on my school and continued in school and started my career a little bit earlier. But it's not like I had to go, mm-hmm. and therefore we have to provide an alternative, you know?
Yeah.
For those that are very violent little fuckers, yes, you need an alternative. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, here's where warrior societies, a lot of different programs like the ones the Army is offering, but our nation mm-hmm. offer. Mm-hmm. Basically, they want to go do stuff with guns. And they want to be disciplined and wear a uniform and march. There's some psychological thing with some kids mm-hmm. where they need that. So that's what warrior societies are all about. Now, if our nations would pump money and prestige and make an institution of that, you know, we could be a long way to keeping the youth where they belong in our communities and actually educating them about their culture at the same time instead of sending them off to do that for the white man. Mm-hmm.
So you think there's room for some sort of warrior society that starts young?
I think it's essential. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, we will continue losing them to the Army. I wish when I was young that there was such a thing. Okay. Every opportunity that was there in my community, I took it, but it never panned out. Like, it wasn't serious. You know, there was these outdoor experience things where they took all the brats in the school and said, you know, you're misbehaving, so you're coming with us for the weekend out into the bush. I was like, great, I'll go. And it turned out to be just like,
2 days in the bush.
Yeah, not really satisfying. If it had been structured into something along the lines of like hunting or outdoor lifestyle or even like warrior, militaristic mm-hmm. type thing, I'd have stuck with that. There was nothing. I was just looking for a disciplined environment. Mm-hmm. Where I could channel all of these tendencies that I had. And if our nation had had that, I would have stayed home, but we didn't. So.
There have been some that start up. I mean, there's programs like Rediscovery.
Yeah, but it has to be real. You know, kids can sense when it's bullshit mm-hmm. and when it's government-minded, you know, mm-hmm. when it's weak, you know. Mm-hmm. The other thing was, when you're that age, you want to be part of something big. Mm-hmm. And you want to be part of something with a history, mm-hmm. like with some weight to it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you link to all of the wars that your nation has had and your ancestors and all that you're carrying, like a big burden, it's good. Responsibility. Mm-hmm. If you don't have any understanding of that, it just seems like some rinky-dink half-ass thing you do on the weekend.
Make work
compared,
projects.
Yeah, compared to a military organization that has all the resources and all mm-hmm. that stuff, does the propaganda really good. There's no comparison. Eh? Mm-hmm. So that was it for me. I mean, how could you compare like hanging around doing Rediscovery things to being a Marine that just, you know, been in Vietnam, like the whole Vietnam experience. Mm-hmm. And even though it was negative and they were defeated, you still are drawn to it because it's something heavy.
Mm-hmm. Life altering.
Yeah.
Meaning one way or the other.
Yeah, and you want to test yourself too. Mm-hmm. If there's no real challenge to it, like a serious challenge, life or death.
Rite of passage.
It has to be life or death. Mm-hmm. So all these things where they kind of do the half-assed rites of passage, it doesn't attract the youth. It's like you want to go up on a big mountain and be really left there for 4 days. With no food,
mm-hmm. with wild animals running around and no safety net and reflective vest and all that stuff, that's attractive to mm-hmm. to kids like who are serious. And that's what this kind of thing is. It's like, okay, you can go get killed. Mm-hmm. You gotta know what you're doing. You're gonna be dead. Good, that's what I want, you know. And
so you have Wasasi going now, your organization.
It's not so much an organization.
Or a commitment.
You know, like a network, like a group of people who mm-hmm. are committed to get to work together, yeah.
Yeah. Do you see that filling some of the gap that's left by not having these commitments more broadly across the country?
I don't think so, because it's more for adults, so to speak. Like it's more of a political mm-hmm. a political thing. There are some people that are involved with the Wasaze group that are working on the kind of thing we're talking mm-hmm. about. But in and of itself, no, it's mm-hmm. no substitute for that. This is more of a kind of an affiliation of people who are working towards a political goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's probably 10 or 20 different things going on under that umbrella. But the work that I do is not that. No.
Okay. No. What do you think about the disbandment of I'm trying to remember the name. The acronym eludes me. The recent disbandment, the past couple of years of the
West Coast Warriors. Well, I mean, that's indicative of the kind of problems you have when you try to do something like I'm mm-hmm. talking about. You know, they were trying to do exactly the kind of stuff that I'm talking about here, and they're shunned by the more, like, the softer native leaders, the mm-hmm. more Canadian-minded native leaders, mm-hmm. and then they're targeted by the police, and it makes it impossible to do mm-hmm. to do what the objective is there. So it just makes it difficult unless you have the support of the elders and the community to what you're doing. You can't really do it.
So why do you think that's lacking? Why do you think people are afraid of supporting anything so militant for any long period of time? I mean, I know this summer it's being called for the protests, the National Days of Resistance.
Well, because of residential schools, they're taught to fear the white man. Mm-hmm. And they do.
Do you think this summer will be that summer of protests that they're...
I think some people will. But then, the people who called the summer of protests, they're going to probably be horrified at what they ended up with. I mean, they were thinking of, like, faxing strongly worded statements over to people and walking around with placards in front of the legislature and stuff. They weren't really thinking about people blockading railroads and stuff. So I think they got more than they bargained for. But mm-hmm. to me, that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the security guards outside the 2010 countdown in Vancouver, and I've seen the questions being asked, what does this mean? And probably as a result of what you're talking about, yeah. You know, a lack of other options, a lack of other leadership, lack of other representation.
That's right. Yeah, there's no channel for all that anger.
Death of the Kelowna Accord, which might not have been all that to begin with.
No, it's even more general than that. It's just there is no channel for the youth to focus their energy, mm-hmm. their anger. You know, the Marine Corps is a channel for American youth to act out their anger in the service of our nation. And you put it that way, that's what the American Marines. Mm-hmm. It's like a warrior cult for the American state.
It's not questioned.
No, and all the people who want to be part of a warrior cult, like a warrior society, mm-hmm. they join the Marine Corps. Or the 82nd Airborne, or Green Berets, or something like that.
Yeah.
Just the Marine Corps is kind of emblematic of it.
It's
so, we don't have that. Yeah. Where do all the angry Indians go? No, they go to the bar, or they go fight in the street and get thrown in jail. Or they beat each other up. Yeah, they beat each other up. It's sad. You know, all those guys, mostly guys, they should be given an opportunity to channel that into some sort of political movement or action. And it's a big gap in our societies.
Well, I'm aware of the time. I know that you had to go.
What time is it? Well, it's 10 to 2.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll wrap up here.
Sure.
Say thank you for your time.
All right, no problem.